You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Business of Practice podcast, where we focus on the business and human sides of equine veterinary medicine. In this episode, we're going to talk with Dr. Barb Crabb about how a basic ethical construct can be used to evaluate and resolve ethical dilemmas and minimize moral distress. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Grice, business consultant and former equine practice owner. The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you in 2026 by Care Credit. Dr. Crabb is a graduate of the UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine and completed an internship in large animal medicine and surgery at Washington State University. While at UC Davis, she did graduate work in biomechanics, studying patterns of locomotion in exercising horses. Then she spent 30 years as a private practitioner and the owner of Pacific Crest Sport Horse, a three-doctor general equine practice in Oregon, where she had a special interest in performance horse medicine. She is an FEI official veterinarian in dressage and jumping. And in early 2023, Dr. Crabb transitioned her practice to her two long-term associates in order to pursue her passion for ethics in veterinary medicine. She completed a master's degree in bioethics at the Neuswanger Institute of Bioethics at the Stritch School of Medicine at Loyola University in Chicago, where now she's on the home stretch of a doctoral program. She currently serves as the chairman of the AVMA's Council on Veterinary Services, where she led the committee responsible for a recent overhaul of the AVMA's Principles of Veterinary Medical Ethics. She's also a member of the AAEP's Ethics and Professional Conduct Committee. Dr. Crabb's a frequent contributor to a large variety of horse publications, and her articles have won numerous American Horse Publications Awards. Her book, The Comprehensive Guide to Equine Veterinary Medicine, was published in 2007, and she is currently writing a veterinary bioethics textbook that will introduce basic ethical theory in the first sections and then draw from cases collected from veterinarians in a narrative ethics approach. She's also developed a 10-step template to help veterinarians evaluate and resolve ethical dilemmas. I'm looking forward to this book coming out. It's going to be great. Dr. Crabb is an avid dressage rider and USDF silver medalist. She lives on a farm outside of Portland with her husband, Bob, a veterinary internal medicine specialist, and they have two daughters who are almost fully launched and currently focus their attention on four dogs, a cat, and two horses. That's a lot of animals. I'm sure it used to be higher, though.
It was way higher.
Right. Anything like me. I mean, when I was a veterinarian, I had eight horses. I mean, eight horses? Really?
Yeah. I got nervous when I got into double digits.
Yes. Double digits
frightened me. Yeah.
Yes. It feels so much better to like let attrition kind of bring things down and don't get any more. Well, welcome, Dr. Crabb. It's great to have you with us today.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
So we think about ethical frameworks as being really useful for reasoning out what course of action will provide the most moral outcome. And most of us do this without even really thinking about it, but our brains are doing it. And there's a number of different basic ethical constructs, including, there's classical five approaches. And then in veterinary medicine, there's the principles of veterinary medical ethics, as well as principles of bioethics. It's a lot. Can you give us a guided tour and explain this in a little more detail?
Oh, boy. So, one of the things, I guess I want to start out by saying that I think we have to think about ethical decisions. We have ethical decisions and then we have ethical dilemmas. And ethical decisions are easy. Ethical decisions are the things where there's kind of a right and a wrong, and you either know what to do or you can look to some of these documents to help you figure it out. And then there are ethical dilemmas where it gets a lot more complicated. So, you know, in human bioethics has been, it's a relatively new field. It probably really came to being in the 70s. And there are quite a few things that have been put together that help you work through how to make a decision when you're facing an ethical dilemma. And the classic one is the four principles that people are familiar with. And that involves considering autonomy, which is the patient's right to choose in human medicine, beneficence and non-maleficence, which is basically do good, do no harm, and then justice, which is kind of doing the fair thing. And when I kind of started on this journey, I guess the program I'm doing is in a human medicine program, obviously, because there are no veterinary medical ethics training programs or bioethics training programs.
Right.
So when we started kind of on our journey to do the upgrade of the principles of veterinary medical ethics, you realize that those four principles, you really have to tweak them in order to apply them to vet medicine. So for example, autonomy, our patients never have the right to choose. Our patients are always dependent on a surrogate decision maker. And in human medicine, the surrogate decision makers have to make a judgment based on patient's best interest, basically. And in veterinary medicine, that's where we always start with that principle of autonomy. So when we did the principles of veterinary medical ethics, we kind of turned that into the principle of stewardship, which says that veterinarians are basically responsible for making sure that the animals are protected. Beneficence and non-maleficence, do good, do no harm. I think that's pretty straightforward. That could be applied to veterinary medicine. I have to laugh though. When I suggested that we use these principles when we started, and we had a large group of people that were working on this project from all aspects of different veterinary industries, and they were like, "We need words that make sense."
So, oh boy, yeah. It's like talking to an attorney when you talk to an ethicist. Or
yes.
I guess it would be that. It's the same thing. It's like, what are you saying?
Yeah. So long story short, we turned those four principles, those classic four principles of human bioethics, into stewardship, integrity, and respect, which I think if you look at any dilemma that you face, they can all sort of fit under those principles. So does that help kind of? It is a lot. No question.
It is a lot. That helps a lot.
The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you by Care Credit. Care Credit keeps equine veterinarians at the heart of care by providing horse owners with simple, budget-friendly financing options. By helping to bridge the gap between costs and care, Care Credit supports healthy financial relationships between veterinarians and their clients. Clients have a flexible way to pay over time for all types of care, and practices get paid in 2 business days. It's a payment experience everyone can feel good about.
So your new book is going to have that 10-step template, which will help people to sort of evaluate and resolve stuff. Can you tell us more about those?
Yeah, so I think what we need, and I struggled with this personally for a long, long time, we need to have, can we go back? Can we talk a little bit about moral distress?
Let's do that.
Yeah, so, because I know that was something that I know you wanted to address. So
yeah,
something that happens that I think with a lot of the issues that we're facing in veterinary medicine is you're faced with a dilemma. You make a decision of what you're going to do without necessarily thinking about it. And you realize sometimes that the decision that you're sort of forced into making isn't what you feel like would be the ethical thing to do. And you brought up the example of a colic, mm-hmm. which I think is a good one. So and I have one of these that is burned in my brain from practice, where, you know, I was out in my truck. I mean, I probably have hundreds of them, but I have one specifically that sticks in my mind. I'm out in my truck. I'm the practice owner. We get a call for a bad emergency. It's not owned by a client. It sounds like a bad colic. And, you know, you develop your radar. You know the ones that you probably really need to go see, right? Both of my associates were far away. I was in the middle of something. It wasn't our client. We simply couldn't get there. And so you know you should, but you can't. And how do you juggle all of that? And that leads to something called moral distress, which is a big contributor to burnout and dissatisfaction and, you know, a lot of the kind of mental health things that impact us as practitioners. So kind of taking that, we need a system that we can think through to help us. And even, once you get sort of familiar with it, it can happen really quickly. So the template that I have set up basically takes all of those questions that you can sort of run through your head, starting with identifying what the major dilemma is. Like, what is really the choice that you have to make here? And then oftentimes a dilemma or an ethical issue has a secondary problem. And a lot of times, actually, what I've discovered is that secondary issue is professionalism. Like, you know what you need to do for the horse, but you also have to deal with your colleagues, or you also have to, you know, you have to juggle more than one specific dilemma. Then the next thing you have to think about is who really has agency in that. So who can you make that decision? Are you the person that can say, I can't do this, or I can? And that comes into play sometimes for our younger associates who experience issues when their boss wants them to do something and they don't feel like it's right. They don't really feel like they have agency. So determining who is really the decision maker can help. And then obviously the clear one is balancing harms and benefits. Like, what are going to be the harms if I do this? What are going to be the benefits if I do this versus what are going to be the harms if I do that? And what are the benefits if I do that? And I'm waving my arms around. I know that's not all that helpful on a podcast. And then my kind of favorite one, which comes from this narrative ethics approach. So a narrative ethics approach is listening to the story. So you can have the basic facts, like you have a colicking horse, you can't go, what, you know, or, but if you hear the whole story about what's happening, there are a lot of contextual features that can sort of impact the decision that you make. And then I run through the more simple thing. Is there a justice concern? Is there a concern about what's fair or what's not? And I will admit that's the one I struggle with a little bit. That's the one I'm still working on, because justice to the animal versus justice to the people versus justice to society, you know, those are all things that we have to think about. And then finally for me, and again, I can get really deep in the weeds on ethics, but I think we have to step back and ask ourselves, what would the compassionate person do? Like, what's the most compassionate decision? And that comes from an ethical theory called virtue ethics. So again, I can get into the weeds on ethics. We basically have, you know, utilitarianism, we have deontology, we have virtue ethics, and I'm sure no one wants to hear all the details about that. But the virtue ethicist just sort of doesn't do a lot of analysis and just thinks about what the right thing to do. And in our case, it's sometimes compassion for the animal. Sometimes it's compassion for the child or the family, or, you know, what is the most compassionate decision? Yeah.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and I think I left out considering who the stakeholders are. Did I say that? That's way up high.
No.
Yeah, that comes earlier. But obviously, you have to think about that too, because it isn't just the veterinarian. It isn't just the horse. Sometimes it is the family, the child, there's a lot of different, society as a whole. I mean, there's a lot of potential stakeholders.
And, you know, then there's the thing that occurs to me right now when you're thinking about what's the compassionate thing to do, what's the best thing for the horse, and then there's the sense of, can they afford to do it? Like, where does the financial thing is just, that is that's such a trap where what you want to do compassionately, sometimes, you know, you're trapping the owner in a financial commitment, or I don't know how, where does that fit in veterinary medicine?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And that's kind of one of the number one contributors to moral distress is having to make a decision about that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think, that's an overwhelming one. And I think with the horses, when you think of patient best interest, so our oath says that we'll protect animals from pain and suffering, right? Mm-hmm. So there are things worse than death.
Yes, and, there are. Oh my God.
So, yeah. So I just think we have to keep that in the back of our minds. Mm-hmm. That euthanasia, isn't necessarily as terrible for the animal. It might be hard on the people who are also mm-hmm. stakeholders, but I wish I had all of the answers to how to solve these problems.
Yeah, I wish you did too. Yeah.
But I do think that being able to work through kind of, okay, what about this? What about that? What about this? Even quickly in your head, at the end of the day, when you do make a decision, it makes you feel better. It makes you feel like you've, because ethical dilemmas don't have a right or wrong answer.
Right.
Right. I mean, ethical decisions do. Ethical dilemmas, it becomes gray, and you have to figure out what the least gray is. And there's all kinds of things you can use. We could talk for hours. I could go on for hours.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a really important point, though, that when it is a dilemma, that there is no right or wrong answer. And so that structured approach, because you know you've gone through it, that helps avoid moral distress, right?
That's what I think. Yeah. And honestly, also, I think it's important to realize that two different people are going to go through that structured approach, and they might come up with a different answer. And it doesn't mean that one is right and one is wrong, because different people have different, I mean, an ethical decision for someone, if you're really on that line, might be different than what the ethical decision is for mm-hmm. someone else in a real dilemma.
Yeah.
In a decision, no. I mean, you make a mistake, should you disclose it? That's pretty clear. That's not hard.
Yeah.
That's
a
yes or no, right? Mm-hmm. But you're faced with some terrible situation with someone who doesn't have enough money, that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't have a yes or no answer.
No.
And that's okay. We all just do the best we can at the end of the day, as long as we're thinking about it.
And that's the other thing that everyone who is listening, especially our early career veterinarians, that everyone's doing the best they can with what they have available.
Right.
And if you remember that, it will help to take that heavy burden of, worrying about it, laying in bed, not being able to sleep. You do the best you can. You make the best decision you can with the information that you have and the situation. And I think the ones that were always the hardest for me were the things where I felt like I had an ethical decision, but I was unable to adequately communicate with the owner enough that they would agree with me. I'm thinking about those, body score 2 laminitic horses that are spending 95% or 99% or maybe 100% of their time down in a stall. They're getting, decubital sore. It's like you're like, you want to shake the people.
Yeah.
That's
the agency question. And I think agency is critical. And I think if you step back when you're in that situation, hard as it may be, and you realize that you don't really have agency, and then you're the only agency that you do have is deciding whether or not to continue helping them. Right.
Right.
And then you have to balance, but I've had so many things that have come up where I've gone through this list of things in my head and I'm like, okay, I'm okay. Like, I just need to do the best I can to keep this horse comfortable. I don't want to abandon my patient because that's not an ethical decision, right? Mm-hmm. And I have to continue to try to help them and not feel bad about it because it's not, I can't make that decision. It still wears on us, obviously.
Right. But, it absolutely does. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, one thing I would really encourage people to do is every talk we go to at AAEP, it always cracks me up, says I've adhered to the principles of veterinary medical ethics of the AVMA. Right, and then no one's ever read it. So I just want to give a shout out.
God, right, did you have to bring that up?
Sorry.
Guilty as charged.
Yeah. So read it because it's basically, it's super useful. So it's divided into two sections. There's, because we basically have a code of conduct, and then we have like our ethical principles. So for those decisions that you have to make, the code of conduct for the AVMA, which the AAEP did an addendum to, if you're facing something and you don't quite know what to do about it, and you know that, sometimes it'll say, this is what you gotta do. Like, it'll tell you what decision to make. And then it tells you, like, you have a pre-purchase exam where you're worried about a conflict of interest. Like, say you're asked to do a pre-purchase exam on a horse where you work for both owner, seller, and buyer, you know, and a lot of people aren't comfortable with that. The one that AAEP did as an addendum that is specific to equine practice, you have to read the PVME first, the AVMA version first, but it tells you what to do. It tells you that you can do that under these following circumstances. And I feel like that helps people make that decision. And then when you get into those real dilemmas, you can lean on the principles, which are stewardship. Right. I am the steward for this animal. That's my ethical responsibility, is to make sure the animal is taken care of or protected. I have to do this with integrity. Kind of goes without saying, honesty. And respect. I have to respect my patients, my colleagues, the laws. That's a whole nother topic, but yeah.
The laws.
Like, you know, I'm famous for saying what's ethical isn't always legal and what's legal.
I know. I love it. I love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
Oh, so much. Like I said, I could go on. I could go on for hours on this. If anyone is interested, just a fun thing. I am doing a very different than this podcast with my daughter, who is a horse professional. And it's definitely, it's kind of more entertainment. It's a mother-daughter vibe. They're short episodes, but we're trying to bring in some welfare and ethical issues, kind of weave that into this mother-daughter interaction that we have going on. So it's Echo Equestrian Media, and it can be found on Spotify and Apple Music. We just started it. We're working out the kinks, but it's been a lot of fun, and a lot of people are kind of having fun listening to it. So
cool. That must be really a fun way to spend time with your daughter too.
Yeah, it's super fun. Yeah.
Yeah. That does sound like a fun thing to do. Yeah. I know how much I'm enjoying having different guests on and talking with people. It's just been really fun. I wasn't expecting doing this podcast to be such a good time, but in fact, it really is.
Yeah. Honestly, for the book, I've been collecting stories from practitioners in all different walks of veterinary medicine. And that's been the best part. I can't make myself write the theory section because I just want to hear these cases and plug them into this template and figure out how I would think about them and talk to people. I've had people in tears.
Of course. Yeah.
Some intense stories. Yeah.
Yeah. Some of the stuff that people face is really hard.
Yeah. Really hard. Yeah.
So thank you, Dr. Crabb, for being with us today.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having me. Super fun.
And thank all of our listeners for joining us for the Business of Practice podcast. And a big thank you to our sponsor, Care Credit. And to all my listeners out there, be brave, embrace change.